This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Next Normal on Resource Centre. I'm Audrey Raj. In this new series, we explore the next normal in all things related to the world of business. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about mental health in the workplace. Now, as we transition into the recovery phase of COVID-19, we're set to face yet another set of challenges in adjusting to this life in the age of corona. Months of being locked down have inevitably impacted the economy, for some their job security, and a need to make up for lost time, which can lead to tremendous stress and anxiety. And because of this impact to the mental health of the workforce, there's been an uptick of employers who are trying to proactively bolster employee benefits and working arrangements to support their staffers during this time. So to talk to us about the rapidly changing landscape of mental health, digital healthcare, and industry best practices in these unprecedented times, we have with us on the show today, Dr. Jeremy Ting from Naluri.
Hi, yes, my name is Jeremy. I'm the president and co-founder of Naluri. So together with Asran, we try and help build Naluri, which is a digital therapeutics company, specifically looking to how we can support people with chronic diseases and here specifically mental health as well.
Dr. Jeremy, third time's a charm for us, I guess. You know, after months of rescheduling, we've finally found a mutually convenient time to have this chat. So how has the MCO and the weeks after that been keeping you, Asran, and the gang at Naluri busy?
Well, I guess MCO has, you know, changed the fabric of every company, and we're no exception. I think in the beginning of MCO, like most startups, we were kind of trying to figure out how to avoid our existential crisis, and we had to quickly adapt. I would say in the first half of the MCO, as Naluri, we were running programs that were both a hybrid model, some on-site stuff and then some online stuff. But we had to quickly sort of change so that we delivered everything online. And that was a massive undertaking for us. However, once that got sorted out, as the MCO progressed, people's views slowly changed from just, what is my business doing? How do I move people from working in office to remote? To actually thinking about mental health, because that became a big issue in a lot of the clients that we were working with. And people starting reaching out to us to ask for mental health as well. And one thing that really started growing for us was our mental health programs that we started to offer employees.
So, Dr. Jeremy, COVID-19 has impacted everyone across the globe, all of us, you know, in various aspects of our lives, like you just mentioned. But in this discussion, I want to focus on how COVID-19 and the MCO has impacted employees and employers' mental health, so we can chart and prepare for the next normal in this area. So maybe we can start with how this pandemic has affected employees and employers over these last few months.
Sure. I'll say three things that's probably happened. Number one is a much greater appreciation, visibility and transparency on in terms of the importance of mental health. I think the conversations that we have nowadays with the employers has completely changed from thinking that mental health would be a stigma, whether the employees themselves would find it valuable, to something that they actually recognize is important now and urgent to address. On the other side of it as well, we've done a lot of testing, if you will, on employees, on the state of their mental health. We run some clinical psychological surveys on people. And we've managed to actually compare the state of mental health with the people that we've tested in the MCO period compared to the last 2 years prior to that. And we have actually found a 20 to 50% increase in people who's got severe or higher on depression, anxiety, and stress. So quite a significant shift in terms of the mental health profile of the employee base. And I think this mirrors a lot of statistics that we've seen both locally in Southeast Asia as well as globally, where people are talking that mental health would actually become sort of the next epidemic following COVID.
So what has caused people's level of anxiety, fear, and depression to increase during this period?
Well, I think it's multifactorial, but I'll say probably the biggest impetus is uncertainty. I think humans are not wired to cope well with uncertainty. We do like our routines. Mm-hmm. And this COVID had come so fast, so swift, and so far-reaching that it's changed pretty much all aspects of our lives. And therefore, from the lack of understanding of what COVID is from the disease patterns, not only from the layperson on the street, but even the professionals themselves were grappling to understand what this pandemic meant, to then the entire changes that's brought to our entire daily routine from waking up to work, going to work, coming home, that entire routine has been disrupted as well. And I think we don't realize it as much, but routines really help us anchor ourselves. And the moment that that gets changed, we are in a state of fear and our adrenaline rises. And therefore, in that heightened state of anxiety, we tend to worry about a lot more things. We try to find meaning and purpose. And more specifically, I guess, for a lot of the employees that we've been dealing with, it has come down to probably three major things. One is social isolation. I think a lot of people felt that when they were at home, a lot of the conversations they had with their colleagues were very transactional because, you know, you ping people on WhatsApp or you call them up or you talk to them on other messaging platforms. It's usually all about work. And the casualness of other conversations that you tend to have in office, like water cooler sort of conversations, tend to not happen because maybe some good meaning on the other employees, we had to say, I don't want to bother them. But that nature of that conversation has completely changed. And I think also from the friends aspect, you're not able to hang out and have as much of that social connection. The second thing for me was essentially the breakdown between the end of your workday to then coming home to relax, because there is not none of those signals, right? You don't kind of get in your car, you don't say goodbye to your colleagues, and then you don't go home. I think there's almost this expectation that work just creeps into the night, creeps into whenever you're available. And I think that has been quite taxing on the employees' behalf. The third thing for us was actually quite interesting. There were some employees, I guess, that were had to work for essential services during the COVID period. I think because a lot of the fear of what's happening with this pandemic and what it meant, there was a lot of anxiety and sometimes even anger towards their own employers for having to work during this period.
Right. Okay. Dr. Jeremy, so we've heard about how businesses have taken huge financial hits during this period, you know, which is leading employers to ask questions or think of new benefit options, alternate offerings or working arrangements that they can kind of provide for their businesses going forward, for their employees as well. So in short, how they can best support their employees through these difficult times. Are the pre-existing run-of-the-mill mental health benefits available in most organizations here sufficient to help the workforce deal with what they need to, or do they really need to be thinking about new benefit options?
That's a great point. And maybe I'll start by saying that even over the last few years, we have seen a pickup of organizations starting to offer mental health services, and also a change in the narrative in terms of mental health. And, you know, for example, AIA Healthist Workplace has been starting to talk about mental health in terms of the Malaysian, you know, National Health and Mobility Surveys. A commentary on that has been more and more on mental health. And I think this has spurred the fabric of how corporations has thought about mental health. However, a lot of the solutions that have been put in place has traditionally been, I guess, two things, right? One is these things called employee assistance programs, which really are hotlines for people to reach out to as and when they need help, or some sort of webinar or training of their employees to say, this is how you should think about mental health and this is how you could help your colleagues. Well, I think this is important in terms of a first step. It's probably not sufficient to really cater for the breadth of the entire population, because mental health surfaces in many different ways. And it is as important as physical health. And I think this whole MCO has, I guess, accelerated the search for new ways of thinking about this. And I think there are three major gaps here. Firstly, it's the mismatch between people who actually use existing services and people who actually require it. For example, we talked about earlier, 20 to 50% of people having, increases in mental health severity. If we look across the population, when we measure, usually about 40% of any population across age groups, across companies, has some sort of elevated measures of mental health risk. An easy way to understand this is when we talk about obesity, right? It's like how much of the population is overweight. We find about 40% of people at risk of mental health. But when we look at the stats of employee assistance programs with their hotlines, it's only about a 2 to 4% take-up rate. So there is this huge gap of people that, technically are unserved. So how do we scale to allow the accessibility to the rest of the people who technically would benefit from these sort of support services? The second thing, I guess, it's also how do we decrease the accessibility of it? Because traditional services, when it's done through either through the counselors or through the psychologist, it's generally still one-on-one. It's quite expensive. And also because it's done through, whether it's a face-to-face consultation or whether it's through a phone call or whether it's through what we're doing now, some sort of teleconferencing medium, it still only allows a one-to-one matching. And therefore, there is such a supply constraint in terms of the professionals that are able to do this to cater for all the employees. So we almost have to rethink our way of how we deliver these services to people. And the third thing is one-off webinars, one-off meetings, one-off training sessions. It's good in terms of enlightening the public, enlightening the employees about what is mental health and how to help other people. However, it's very hard to internalize it on your day-to-day. So this needs to be something that's a lot more ongoing. So we need to start thinking about much more longitudinal support for these folks. It has to be peppered throughout the year, incorporated from platforms that are self-serve where they can continue reading about it, new information that comes out, possibly ongoing sort of information with webinars, but also giving them the ability to kind of reach out to people and other experts as well as and when they need it.
We are going to take a quick break for some messages right now, but when we come back, we discuss industry best practices in these unprecedented times. The Next Normal will be right back in just a bit. BFM 89.9.
Big Front Man, BFM 89.9.
We're back. This is The Next Normal on Resource Center with me, Audrey Raj. And online with me right now is co-founder of Naluri, Dr. Jeremy Ting. And we are discussing the rapidly changing landscape of mental health, digital healthcare, and industry best practices in these unprecedented times. Dr. Jeremy, let's get into just that, why don't we? What are the industry's best practices when it comes to caring for your workforce mental health right now?
Sure. So I think there are many people who have a strong views on this. but I guess one of the ways to think about it is suggestions from the Interagency Standing Committee, which is an organization dedicated to strengthening the humanitarian sort of assistance, right? Mm-hmm. And they have suggested, I guess, five main things. One is essentially, how do you foster an environment that really empowers and encourages employees to express mental well-being? Number two is, how do we ensure good quality communication? And importantly, accurate information in order to mitigate, uncertainty and increasing the agency and the sense of control. The third thing is, how do you allow for reasonable time for rest and self-care activities? And this is really important for employees. The fourth thing is, how do you provide these sort of a brief and regular a platform for the working employees to essentially express concerns, ask questions, and essentially open a dialogue. But how do you do that without, I guess, breaking confidentiality? Because I guess mental health still is quite personal. And because of existing stigma, it's important to ensure confidentiality. And the last thing is, how do you pay attention to employees who are experiencing difficulties, you know, whether it's work, whether it's personal life, whatever emotional challenges that they're going through, how do we, as a corporation, as an organization, give tailored, supported services to these individuals in the way that they require it?
What about on an individual level? You know, what can you do for yourself to help yourself?
Yeah, this is really an interesting question. And we've actually been having a lot of debate about it within Lurie. I think the most important thing is, firstly, recognizing that we all do require help and that mental health is an important part of our lives. And I think this is a combination of just, you know, knowledge that people need to understand, the recognition of it, and almost admitting to yourself that, you know, we are all humans and it's okay to be stressed out, to be depressed at times. I think the second thing is, once we get to that point, it's allowing ourselves to actually reach out to other people as well. So how do you reach to this point where you are okay and comfortable to admit that I need help? And I can reach out to either my own colleagues, my own support network, or actually to, more importantly, to professionals. Because although sometimes friends and colleagues have the best intentions, they're often not the right skill set. They often don't have the right skill set to support us in a way that we need it. And the third thing, I guess, is also then looking beyond, right? It's actually other people around us. How do we, I guess, spread the knowledge of the importance of mental health, and also looking to our other friends and colleagues, and in how that we can actually help them as well. I think that there is this whole concept about, you know, physical first aid, right? People go to learn about CPR, your airway, your breathing, your circulation. But how about mental first aid? How do we build our own skills to deliver mental first aid to our own friends and colleagues as well? And I think the fourth thing really is, we've touched about it before, is how do we really set time aside for ourselves to self-care? I think looking after ourselves is really important. So we've got to set time for ourselves, do things that help build our own sort of mental resilience, so that after we can look after ourselves, we can actually look after our other people as well. The analogy I like to say is, for example, in airlines, you always are told to put on your air mask first before you put on air mask for other people. I think
especially help yourself first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think at this time when there is a lot of mental health issues going around, you yourself need to be steady, have your own mental resilience before you're in a good place to help others.
Right. Dr. Jeremy, judging from the traffic over these past 2 or 3 weeks, I think it's safe to say that most employers have welcomed their employees back into the workforce. What kind of support do employers and employees need right now, you know, when re-entering the workforce?
Sure. I think first and foremost, I know it's not the topic of this discussion, but you know, how do you bring colleagues back safely? I think there's a whole bunch of precautionary measures we do need to take with the pandemic. Just because, you know, movement is open up doesn't mean that the virus has gone away magically. It's still there. Risk is lower than before, but we still need to take precautionary measures. And I think this goes from organizations recognizing that these measures need to be put in place, but also then educating the employees as well to take these measures. On the mental health side, I think there's a lot that can be done. Firstly, recognizing that people coming back to work, not everyone will be at the same level of ability to come back. Some of them, it's because of just the mental state that they're in. They may not be confident enough to come back to work because of fear of the virus. But some of them could actually just because of other barriers in their household, it could be actually social support that is lacking. For example, maybe it's a young kid that is still not going back to school. They house helpers are not available, or they could not afford it, or the house helpers are not coming back. So, or the family's not around. So they still need to stay at home to look after their kids. So I think we have to recognize we still need to have this sort of flexible working arrangement for at least this short-term period until we reach a state of stability, whether that is sort of reverting back to what is before or most probably what is the new normal, because I think things are still very much in flux now. And I think just doing that, recognizing that the need for flexibility, recognizing and having an open discussion about people's different requirements allows employers to give the employees a sense of control about how they want to come back to work. I think on the longer term, it's more about the services that an employer can offer these employees. And I think touching back to what we were talking about before, I think now the need for something digital, something that can be delivered remotely and something that can be delivered at scale, it's really important because you're going to have a lot more employees that probably require these services now, and because not everyone's going to be back in office by that measure, you will need to kind of deliver everything sort of digitally as well. So I think it's almost rethinking about the current services that are currently provided and how we could almost either reimagine it or augment it in a way that serves our employees in a way that is required.
So what are you guys at Naluri working on to help aid employers and employees digitally? Is there anything that you can share with us? Anything that's happening behind the scenes?
Yeah, definitely. One of our most exciting projects, I guess, we're working on is called this Naluri Digital EAP 2.0. It's a bit of a mouthful, but we are trying to, in our own small way, try to reimagine how mental health support services could be delivered to employees. And here, we still embrace what has been done. So we still do things such as hotlines. We still do information portals, but we try to augment it in by delivering other services. So what we try to do in addition to that is to start first with how do we cater for the wide base of employees. So this would be creating a dedicated support hub for all the employees, right? This would be an information portal. This would be a repository of webinars. This would be blog articles, content, curated mental health information. So the employees have access to the latest, greatest, most accurate information, but also upskill them in terms of mental first aid. We talked about this before. How can they be there for their other employees as well? However, we know that, you know, not everyone is in this wide base, and other employees have certain risk factors. So we're trying to cater to them in different ways. I think one of the things we recognize with hotlines is that oftentimes people wait till they're really, really, really stressed out before they are able to pick up a hotline and ask for help. So we try to break down the barriers to access. So what we try to do is to have a bigger webinar sessions to talk about, hey, here's mental health. And by the way, we also have a digital platform that you can reach out to mental health professional colleagues that can help coach you. And this is what, I guess, the core of what Naluri has been building is this sort of digital app that surrounds the individual with this multidisciplinary team of coaches, from a psychologist to even other doctors, dietitians, fitness coaches, executive coaches, and financial planners, to really help support you in your own unique set of portfolio challenges that you're facing. Because oftentimes mental health isn't just a siloed risk factor or challenge that you're dealing with. Oftentimes it's created because of other stresses in your life. So we are trying to kind of broadly support an individual across as many of these stresses as possible. And oftentimes you look at one individual versus another individual, that unique compilation or mix is completely different. And the last thing we're trying to kind of do is essentially, how do we tie all of this up into, I guess, an ongoing program that almost changes the narrative within the company? Because as we deliver these programs for employers, we could have regular webinars that end up educating the employee base, raises the awareness. We have the existing website people can go for information. And hopefully through this as well, we get people accessing help through many different ways, either digitally through chat, either through a hotline that they call, or actually through a remote face-to-face therapy as well.
Speaking of remote face-to-face therapy, there are some new startups that we've seen mushroom over these last few months that have embarked on mobile chat platforms, you know, that will allow users to get bite-sized coaching from certified mental health professionals during this time. Would something like this prove beneficial in the long run?
I think it's definitely a boon. And I think the more people in the space trying to, I guess, promote the importance of mental health is definitely very, very welcomed. And I think they definitely have a role to play in a certain segment of population that like those sort of services. And like you said, it's bite-sized things. So not everyone really requires the intensity of, you know, regular psychotherapy or counseling from coaches. And maybe sometimes all you need out is a friendly hand and a friendly voice to reach out to. And I think this is really, really important. And in this way where it's digital is to chat, it also helps decrease accessibility and skill for other people to reach out to. And I think that's really important. However, I think on a broader sense, maybe where it's lacking is thinking about on a programmatic level, how do we truly improve people that have the highest risk factors? Because I think in those group of people, you do need something a little bit more structured and a little bit more long-term. And also, most importantly, what we are trying to kind of focus on as well, and I think it's important across not only in the mental health segment, but healthcare in general, is outcomes. So we specifically try to measure health outcomes before and after. So we have a very transparent way of seeing whether there is improvement in the individual. And in the physical sense, I think everybody knows about this. This is about BMI to measure obesity. You have things like HbA1c, which is a measure of blood glucose. But what do we have in the mental health space? And oftentimes, I think people think that there is nothing. It's very qualitative. You know, it's about some conversation I have with a professional, and they're going to tell me whether I'm depressed or not. But the reality, there are clinical tools to measure this. And one of the tools that we use, among others, is this thing called DAS-21 that actually does measure in a quantitative way your level of relative risk of mental health issues, specifically depression, anxiety, and stress, compared to a normal population. So we can actually say, you know, are you mild? Are you moderate? Are you severe, extremely severe, relative to a normal population? This is obviously not diagnostic, but it gives you a sense of your current state of mental health. And, you know, maybe if you retest yourself again a few months from now, you could actually see a movement, whether it's in the right direction or not.
All right. Dr. Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Before I let you off the hook, I have to ask you, what's next? You know, do you see COVID-19 having a lasting mental and emotional impact on the current and new generation of workers?
The short answer is yes. Firstly, I don't think COVID, in the way that we understand it, is going to go away soon. I think from a lot of the data that we're seeing, the virus is mutating really, really quickly. And it may, in fact, rather than getting a vaccine and then the virus goes away, like how SARS did, we might end up in a world whereby it's kind of more like the flu, where every year we need a new vaccine to prevent or decrease the probability of getting infected. And therefore, we may need to, I guess, reimagine how the entire organization structures themselves from travel to safety in the workplace as well. I think in mental health and remote working specifically, I think the time has come now to almost have settled into a completely new normal state, because I think there are a lot of benefits of this. I think a lot of companies are deciding that actually, because we're forced to move towards remote working, they found a lot of benefit in that world, and therefore almost embracing it for the future. And this brings a lot of benefit from reduced capex of large office spaces. However, in this way of distributed workforce, then the traditional way of doing a physical intervention in a specific workplace, whether it is for physical health, whether it is for mental health, then has to be completely reimagined. And I think this gives us the opportunity now to start adopting new digital health solutions to help with this. And I know digital health has been something that people have been talking about for a long time, but I think this is a golden opportunity for us to really start embracing it and adopting it. But I think a couple of things has to take place. I think one is essentially the will from the leaderships across organizations and across different industries to really say this is something that we really want to do. And the second side of it is almost a plea from the payment infrastructure. We need to start recognizing that mental health is also as important as physical health, and payment structures needs to be in place to adopt this. Otherwise, we would be in a situation where it would be a huge growth now, but in a new normal, because it's not paid for, it's not sustainable, and therefore it cannot be adopted.
I've been speaking with Dr. Jeremy Ting from Naluri. Now, if you missed out on any part of this conversation, the podcast of this interview will be up on our website, bfm.my, and the BFM app in just a few minutes. And while you're there, go check out our previous episodes on a whole bunch of things that are changing in the business world right now, like hybrid events, digital banking, and many, many more. The Next Normal will be back again same time next week on Resource Center to discuss how you can stay ahead of the curve in this new business environment we find ourselves in. Till then, this is Audrey Raj for Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.